And now, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for the Ray Shasho Show, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Each week, Ray spotlights in-depth interviews with legendary and up-and-coming authors and music artists. Ray also features the movers and the shakers of the music and publishing industries and suggests important methods for getting the most out of your public relations and marketing needs. Please welcome music journalist, author, and entrepreneur, Ray Shasho.
Hello again, everyone, and Happy New Year. I'm Ray Shasho, broadcasting from BBS Radio, and welcome to the show where we spotlight legendary and up-and-coming music artists and authors. Brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call us today at 941-877-1552 or visit www.publicityworksagency.com. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. Alana Miles was born in Toronto, Canada, listening to FM radio stations that introduced her to an international compilation of music. She was raised in the city of Toronto, where she studied to become a graphic artist, splitting time on her family's ranch in Buckhorn, Ontario, and spent her early years competing as an equestrian on the Ontario Ace Circuit and competing in Canada's prestigious Royal Winter Fair prior to deciding that she would make music her calling. Alana appeared as an actor in TV commercials, modeled, styled a wardrobe for local celebrities, worked as a makeup artist and consultant to pay for her early demo tapes and attempts to secure a record deal for her team. Though she was born to a privileged family, she chose to remain independent. After a decade of paying dues, performing concert venues, drinking establishments, nightclubs, coffee houses, and a hotel bar, she spent 5 long years recording her debut album released by Atlantic Records. Alana was and will always be married to her music. The Alana Miles' first self-titled album released in Canada in the spring of 1989 produced 4 top 40 hits, Love Is, Black Velvet, Lover of Mine, and Still Got This Thing. Released internationally in 1990, Atlantic Records finally hit pay dirt with their number one international smash, Black Velvet, winning a Grammy Award for Best Female Rock Performance, along with several Canadian Juno Awards, a Diamond Award for sales in excess of $1 million in Canada, the only artist who still retains this status for a debut record. After its first year of release, Black Velvet received the ASCAP Award for over 1 million radio plays and the ASCAP Millionaire Award in 2005 for over 5 million radio plays. SOCAN in Canada awarded the songs Black Velvet and Lover of Mine each with an award for over 100,000 plays in Canada in 2005 with her number one hit song, Instead of a Kiss to Follow. Her follow-up multi-platinum album, Rocking Horse, back in 1992, received a Grammy nomination for the title track, Rocking Horse, and 3 Canadian Juno Awards. Prior to her third 1995 Alana album, she signed with manager Miles Copeland III after attending his annual songwriting retreats in France. After the sale of over 8 million records, she concluded her alliance with Atlantic Records, and in 1997, ARC 21 Records released her fourth record, Arrival, also 1997, which saw the top 40 hit, Bad For You. Atlantic Records cemented Alana's release from her 7-8 album deal with a parting gift, The Very Best of Alana Miles, in 1999. Compilation released on WMC and internationally on ARC 21 EMI, re-released as Miles and More in 2000, on ARC 21 Universal Music Group, containing hits from all 4 albums, and is scheduled for termination. Funds from an out-of-court settlement with a national Canadian publication afforded Alana the luxury of spending the time required to record, executive produce, and co-write 9 of the 11 tracks for Black Velvet, leased to an indie label in Canada, which has since 2013 been terminated. The album includes a contemporary remake of her classic hit, co-produced with Toronto Tian, Mike Brokowski, and Veronica Ferraro from France. mixed by renowned producer Terry Brown. The lease for Atlanta's independently owned 2009 CD Black Velvet was terminated in September 1st, 2013, repackaged, retitled for 85 BPM with added tracks including an original re-record of Black Velvet, return master recordings of her 1997 Arrival CD, now distributed by TuneCore.com, re-released to all digital stores and remixed in celebration of her 25th anniversary. Expect to hear more music and news for her 28th anniversary season of 2018. Here are just a few of Atlanta's infamous quotes. Justice is never blind. She just takes your precious time. A good song lives on till well after we're gone. It has the power to inspire others and move people's hearts without their even being fully aware. One hit wonder? Yeah, only one only needs to get it right once. One only needs to get it right once. I challenge anyone, including me, to be better. Black Velvet. God put me on this planet to accomplish a certain amount of things. Right now, I'm so far behind, I can never die. Please welcome singer, songwriter, actress, Alanna Miles to the Ray Shasho Show. Hello, Alanna.
Just a minute. I want to copy that bio. That's the best bio I've ever heard. Is that about me?
The check will be in the mail.
Hey, I've done a lot. I want that bio. I'm sorry, I've never written anything quite so poetic.
I love your quotes, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Somebody must have got me high. You know, one day and wrote it down.
Well, my favorite is the one-hit wonder. Yeah, one only needs to get it right once. Exactly. And you said that's definitely true with Black Velvet, which is a timeless classic, you know?
Well, I'm lucky for me.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's unfortunately, it seems, and it doesn't really matter. You know, call me a one-hit wonder all you want. Ooh, that hurts. Ooh, ouch.
Yeah.
Ouch. You go ahead. You try. Go ahead and beat that. I can't. That's okay. I don't live in the past, but I still have a voice, and still making music, and it's lovely. I won't deny that I'm not grateful or very, I don't know, a lot happier with my lot in life, perhaps, for having achieved the wonderful achievements that the U.S. I was able to, you know, gather the popularity of people to listen to my song as much as they do, and eventually be able to afford my rent.
I want to say happy belated birthday, by the way.
You were born
on Christmas Day, and I was born January 27th, 1959, so we're very, very close in age.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, and may I say you look as beautiful as ever.
You don't know that. You're not seeing any current photographs. That looks pretty awful nowadays. I just broke my leg. Ouch.
You got
I can't even make it to the hairdresser, so that's it. My hair is white.
You got some wonderful pictures out there, though. But, you know,
well,
you
I'm very lucky. I have really good photographers.
And they can't be that good. It's got
to
be, you know.
Because I don't look that good, I'm telling you. I'm the Wizard of Oz. It's funny because I get these young men, they're like, ooh, I'd like a date with you. And I'm thinking, yeah, sure you would. Mind you, maybe I'm cutting myself off short and just being way too Irish for my own good. But, you know, that's sort of the way I feel about my vanity.
Well, Alanna, you're an incredible singer, and I really
thank
mean
you.
That. Great songwriter, performer. All of your six albums are terrific, and especially the last one, which I love, and I'm going to talk about it in just a little bit because I really fell in love with your latest release. You know, you should still be all over the U.S. charts, in my opinion. But you know how music is nowadays.
Sure.
Yeah. Unfortunately, they promote, terrestrial radio is not what it used to be. I used to be a top 40.
I'm lucky to have a song that gets played on radio every day. Other people don't. Not everybody does.
But your music is terrific.
I'm not giving up on the whole idea. I mean, I think when I started, it was later in life. I was in my late 20s, mid to late 20s, when I actually got a deal and got signed and got it out there. So I was more footed in my struggles, and I was really determined that if I was going to, this little girl from Toronto, who nobody would even sniff at, I was determined that if I was going to leave my mark on this planet, I was going to do it in a way that I would be proud of it looking back. Well, I did myself proud. I worked so hard, and I was such a pain in the ass. People called me difficult to work with. I don't really much care, because I look back now, and I'm really proud of how much time I spent and the way in which I went about the hiring the right people to deliver the creativity and to get the hard work that went into the making of my work lives on. And I think there's life when you create something of high quality. I think that ABBA and Elton John and all of the wonderful, wonderful artists that have, and Queen, all of those people who created great records, their music will live on as a result of it being the initiator of pop music and it becoming so derivative today.
Right. I agree.
But, you know, I have to tell you the honest truth. I thought I was going to succeed based on the, how bad most everybody else in my competitive factor was. So I never compared myself to a bad example. I would compare myself to somebody who I admired, like Led Zeppelin or Peter Gabriel or Linda Ronstadt or Fleetwood Mac or, you know, whomever I felt was really wonderful, and I would like to sell records like them and be accepted, my music to be accepted in a popular way like those artists. So I worked to develop my music so that it would be, it'd have a classic nature to it. So they couldn't sell me, and I couldn't keep my deal with Atlantic going and my success going because I didn't give them a record that was celebrated one type of music. Mm-hmm. I'm all over the map. I do ballads, pop, blues, country, gospel. I just do it. I don't care. But that's what, if I'd had the right manager to promote that, I'd have an audience that would be wider. But I gave up after a while because it was such a corrupt industry. And now, I'll get the right manager. I'm working with someone now, and I got the right pipes. I've still got my voice, and not over for me. There's still an opportunity for me to do things the way they should have been done in the first place, so I'd see the millions in my pocket instead of putting $80 million in someone else's pocket while I starved.
Exactly.
Well, it's all, I feel I'm able to relive the episode with the talent that I have now and the drive that has not left me, provided I put together the right team of people to help me in the situation of my delicate situation I'm in now.
I keep on creating. I had Miles Copeland on the show.
Oh, yeah. He's great. I mean, Miles Copeland ripped me away from Atlantic.
Uh-huh.
Best thing he ever did for me was rip me away from Atlantic on an 8-album deal, 7-album with option for 8 albums. I signed a one-shot deal with no packaging, and then I didn't miss the statute of limitations of 2 years you're given to fight the contract. I didn't have an American lawyer. By the time I came back from Europe promoting the record for 2 years, I learned it was too late to go at my record company to say, hey, let's do a fair deal here.
Right.
I missed the opportunity. So they had me over a barrel and eventually just didn't want to continue investing in someone who made music that was completely all over the map and not like when you look for a genre.
Yeah, right.
I'm kind of genreless.
Right.
You know, because on the one hand, on my first record, you have heavy metal, and then you got blues. Oh well, then you got country. Oh well, and then you got pop, and then you got rock. So the classic rock, so whatever. It was just too disturbing for the record company. And the fans loved it, and I'm proud of it.
I can just go on
and continue doing what it is my brand does. And, you know, there will always be an audience for people who do good work.
It's a good thing to be eclectic in your music. You don't want to...
I can't help myself. I am what I am. I can't do it any differently.
Well, sure,
but look how well it succeeded in spite of me.
Yeah.
I didn't want it to succeed like that. I didn't expect it to.
Right.
I certainly didn't expect Black Velvet to be the one that took people's hearts. And I find it not so ironic that it's about a man that took people's hearts, stole women's hearts, and men. He's a cross-gender rock and roll king. Elvis.
He was definitely cross-gender. I agree with you.
Totally cross-gender.
Yeah. He was really into the gospel music, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, and he did that. In fact, Black Velvet was the first number one song since Elvis Presley to hit all four markets. At number one. in America. That's, nobody really knows those statistics, but I remember all this crap.
Oh, yeah. Your most recent release, 85 BPM, is incredible. Okay?
Oh, thank you so much.
I call it a seductive, badass, bluesy rock masterpiece blended with a few sublime softer tracks. The lyrical melody...
It's all over the map.
The lyrical and melody content on the album is pure genius. I mean, I love this album.
Thank you. I gave it a lot of thought. It's what I don't say, not what I do.
I gave it 5 stars. It's an incredible album.
Oh, bless your sweetheart. That's not, you see, that's kind of my point. I made that record, 8 years ago, and you're talking about it now and saying these lovely, lovely things. That's all I needed to hear. I've done my job.
It's, you know,
that's why I do it, because I certainly as hell didn't make any money. It cost me $250,000 to make. I went $250,000 further into the hole to finish it.
Yep.
I didn't make a dime back. People profited what they did. I'm sure it didn't pay back the $250,000, but I'm sure that they profited quite some. I didn't see any of it. And then I got it back, and I put it on TuneCore for the world to see and be available in people's iPods.
And that's all I
can do right now is promote the crap out of it and be proud of it. Because it's good music, and I work very hard, and I will always make records that are good quality. And it's wonderful because producers will hear it and go, oh, I'd like to make a record with her. But then it may not be the right way to go. So I'm working now with people that I most trust, writers from my past that I've always found that, you know, million-dollar idea with. And then I'll hire in people who qualify people to do the technical aspects of it.
Right.
It's all down. I have to wear a lot of hats, and I need help. So I'm looking at new management.
The lyrical content on this album is incredible. I love the words "Prime of My Life," which is a favorite. You know, there's a big hole in my heart.
Yeah, that came from my feeling about where I was in my 40s making music. You know, entering my 50s in rock and roll, and I thought that all the baby boomers might feel kind of like that. Like, kill the killjoy, man. I want to live. That's my attitude. My motto. Kill the killjoy. Live.
For all the rock and roll I've lived, I've drunk a case of blues.
Well, Joni Mitchell helped a little there.
Yeah. Love
Come
that.
On. I mean, you know. Blue.
Yeah.
You know, she wrote that song at I Drunk a Case of You. On the lyric line in Joni Mitchell's song, and I was an enormous fan, I drink a case of you. It was a ballad, and it went, he's in the army now. Last time I saw Richard, he sent me a something or other in a coffee percolator. And, Canada, with your face paint on it twice. Oh, in my life, water is so big. Oh, I could drink a case of you, my darling. Your name spelled on it twice. I'm screwing up the language, but that's where I stole that line.
I love it.
I stole a lot from Joni Mitchell. I just, as you can see, I don't remember any of her music, but I just sang some for you. I guess I must have remembered some.
Also, Can't Stand the Rain, very Bonnie Raitt.
Thank you. I love Bonnie Raitt. She's just the answer to blues, commercial blues. But, that was my favorite song, and I kind of tried to do a kind of a justice to Ann Peebles. She wrote it, and to Little Feet's version, Little George.
Love Little Feet, yep.
But, you know, I had a chat with, I think at one point I mentioned to, I wanted to record the song, and Brian Adams had said, well, what the fuck, do it, I've done it.
Right.
But, and I went, all right. I didn't realize it was covered by so many, but it really is a great song. So I did my spin on it.
Who played guitar on that?
That's the late Jeff Healey, my dear friend from Canada, who died of cancer, unfortunately.
Yeah, he was incredible.
He was incredible. He was a guy that played he had that song Angel Eyes from the late 80s, 90s.
Yep.
And it was Angel Eyes. And he played with the guitar in his lap.
Yep.
He was blind, and he was just a delightful creature. He was such a nice man. My dear friend, I used to play at his club. And before he died, I didn't know he was going. And I said, can we do something together? And he said, sure, yeah. And just, sure, absolutely. I'd love to. And
yeah,
came in and played
player.
On that song. It was many
great
years
player.
Ago. I kept the tracks, and I then did the track, put it out with my new record, thinking, oh, well, what the hell. I didn't put it on the record because it was too much money to pay people licensing fees. But I put it available, and the licensing fees go direct from TuneCore to the writers.
Mm-hmm.
I don't take the publishing on it. So whatever I make, they make.
Another song on that album that, you know, in my opinion, should have been a top 40 classic was Comme ça va. Very
oh, thanks.
Cool song.
Yeah, I wrote that. It was my version of Voulez-vous coucher avec moi?
Yeah, exactly.
And I was also working with a French producer, and she inspired me. I had an idea that I wrote on my way to the airport, and I sang it into one of those miniature recorders. And
right.
I played it for her and said, here we are, and here is it. And then she helped me with the French, and I had her come in and help me produce it with Mike Borkowski to give it more of a European kind of in-house sound. It never wound up sounding in-house, but it did sound very cool. And then Terry Brown from Rush fame came in to mix the whole thing and make it sound like $1 million. So I have to give all the parties involved, right from the songwriters up to all these songwriters have been my consistent songwriters throughout my life. I'm still working on music now with my dearest companion and songwriter, Nancy Simmons, who wrote Hurry Make Love, and What Am I Going to Do With You? No, she wrote Rocking Horse with me, which we were nominated for a Grammy second year round. And then we didn't win because Melissa Etheridge won with I'm the Only One. I stole black velvet. Who cares? I don't care. I don't care. I won the Grammy. Okay for you.
I love that.
Whatever. All right. It was her turn. She deserved to win it on the way in. I mean, I think her management were slightly like, what the hell? Because here's this newcomer from Canada, slinky ass Miles comes along and, you know, sings this song. It was a slam dunk. Everybody went wild for it in 1990.
Uh-huh.
So, and then she'd been working for how many years now to try and get a career happening? She finally got some serious success, and this unknown comes along and just claims her throne. So I don't think that anybody was too pleased in that camp. So when they won the next year, I kind of thought it was sad that she couldn't have picked a song that didn't sound so derivative of Black Velvet to win. But I did feel like I won again.
Yep. I think so.
Okay. Yep. Whatever. It's all good.
All good. You got a couple of beautiful, songs that I call surreal as well. I mean, I love you. What a wonderful track that is.
Oh, thank you. I should be delighted to hear that. Nancy Simmons wrote that and brought that song to me. I didn't have as much to do with it as she did.
Right.
She was more of a writer. It was her song idea. She brought it to me, and it went through a whack of changes and producers and title changes and so on, and before it wound up being I Love You. Because I wanted something very positive on the record.
Sure.
And she just let me do with it what I did with it. But it was a lot more of her idea than mine, I have to say. It's a beautiful song, isn't it?
It is a beautiful song.
Yeah, that came from, she was overlooking the California mountains.
Yep.
Yeah, and when I demoed it, I was looking over the California mountains when I sang it. So it's got a lot of nostalgia. And it's such, I love you, let me think. Don't you know it's true? Well, it's a positive message, and I just loved the song and asked her if I could rewrite the lyric to suit, and she let me change some lyric, but it's basically her right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that song, I have to give her the credit for that. That's her song. She brought it to me and shared it with me.
And also Faces in the Crowd, another beautiful track.
That's a Christopher Ward, David Tyson song, same writers as Black Velvet, and I fell in love with it and had to record it. No one gets it, but I love it.
I love it, too. I love this album. I really do, and I'm not just saying that. I really, really, truly
love. Well, thank you.
Album.
I spent a lot of money, and I did only songs that I would love, and I didn't stop spending money until I found it to be as good as, if not better than, my first and second records.
How
thanks to Terry Brown, he put it all together.
Yep. you know, a lot of people that I interview, you know, a lot of the legends of, you know, rock and R&B, and, you know, they all have a hard time promoting their new stuff, which it really makes me mad, and that's why I get them all on my show, so I can help promote everybody. But, you know, why is the record industry so stuck on, you know, people like Taylor Swift for number one?
Well, I think it's called payola, isn't it? I mean, the radio stations have a deal that they play, you know, that it's financial. Also, the music is good. Let's not discount that. It's good music. She writes good songs.
I disagree with that, because I've heard her singing without, say, auto-tune.
No, she's terrible. No, she's awful. I mean, you know? I'm not going to get all fired up jealous over a little cream puff. No? But I think she's the queen of cream puffs.
Right.
Right? If her out there, I mean, she worked very, 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 very hard, and she had a fan base, and that's how you get that kind of success. You know? Lady Gaga proved herself. Her first music was dumb and
right.
derivative of Madonna. And if I were Madonna, I'd be pissed off, too.
Yep.
Express Yourself was a rip. However,
they
aren't my sour grapes to chew. But
yep.
I never would have thought twice about Lady Gaga, but my, oh my, has she proven herself as a entertainer for all time.
You know, I think if you can sing, just like you sang to me on the phone without any devices or anything, and you can prove yourself, that to me shows, you know, your talent. And, you know, there's two artists out there. I can honestly say they do have a good voice. One of them is Christina Aguilera. She does have a good voice, very good voice.
Oh, an amazing voice. And sometimes
yep.
she sings a great song.
Yep. And she did Black Velvet when she was 11 years old.
Nine.
Oh,
let me correct you. It bothered the hell out of me because she was doing something really sexy with her voice, and I was worried that's what I did to people.
Oh, my God.
So that's what I did to young girls, and I made them, I went, oh, no, what am I doing? She learned how to sing Circles Around Me, don't worry.
Yeah, she's got a good voice.
Oh, does she ever.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's a fantastic singer. Holy crap, what power. And good taste.
Yeah.
You know, she chose that Celine Dion could have maybe lost.
Yeah.
And, well, she's got she likes to do a lot of licks, but she's got a great voice, and her natural tendencies in the blues is just marvelous. Very tasteful.
Yeah, I like how she does imitations, too, of other singers. She does a good job at that as well. She mimics a lot of, you know, famous singers. She does. She's good at Christina Aguilera is good at mimicking other artists. You know,
is she? I don't know.
She does a good job doing that too.
Oh, okay.
I went on YouTube and I saw Black Velvet has over 19 million views. That's incredible.
Where?
On
Vivo.
On YouTube.
I'm trying to. There's only two channels for YouTube that would be mine and Vivo.
I think it was yours. Your channel.
I think only has 9. It's out by about 40 million because for the last 10 years I've been fighting with Warner Atlantic, Universal Publishing, and YouTube to gain my right to monetize, and they've been deleting my account. And every time they delete account, I lose 10 million.
Oh my goodness.
So it'd be like more around 100 million or 80 million by now, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You got to fight the good fight, I had no choice but to lose my numbers in order to make sure I was paid. Because every time they lost a deleted account, an account on me, I was pissed off.
Yeah.
And I finally eventually got letters from the writers, and they all squared it with their publishers that I was allowed to monetize. I had the legal right to monetize my own work and share in the monetization that Universal's pulling and that Warner is pulling and that the writers are pulling, but I am not. And finally I got that, and now I'm making an income. Now I can pay my rent.
Good. Well, is it true that you did not get a royalty check from...
Till about 18, 19 years. Let's see, I'll add it up. Just a minute. Okay, I'll actually tell you when. I'm opening my files now. And as I was just doing my year end, and I was looking at Atlantic files, and I was looking for statements because they had a new portal, and I was trying to get log in. And I'm like, oh, and I got to find all this technical information. What was the number in your last statement? Blah, blah. So I'm opening up the file, and I stumbled onto my very first royalty payment ever. And I can tell you when that was. It was, oh, God, paid on behalf of Atlantic Records Corporation. My first royalty check was. Now, I was signed in 87. I was released in 89. I made millions by 1990. Many, many millions, probably about, I'm guessing we'd sold about 10 million records by 1995. So from that, my first check I received was for $5,000, $5,185, and it was on June 2nd,
2008.
So what's that? That's June. I was signed in June. Let's call it a spade a spade. I'll say 90. Let's say, for the release of the record in 1989.
Right.
Minus, so that's when I should really start being paid. Minus 2008 is 19 years.
Why was that?
I had to pay back $7 million worth of expenses.
Why was that? Why didn't you get paid until 2008?
They recouped. That's why I couldn't rewrite my contract. I missed the statute of limitations to say that they needed to be fair with me. I made you millions and millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars, and I need to see some of it.
Right.
And they just dumped me like a hot potato.
That's crazy.
I had too much to say, and they said they didn't want a female U2. I said, oh, gee, someone will.
So now you're good to go.
I never really thought of myself as a U2, but...
Yeah.
I'm not a political leader. I'm a pop rock singer, but whatever. There was a personal differences. I was dropped from the label. I was assured, the CEO assured me that if I wanted some money, I could come to him personally and he'd do me a loan.
Right.
He'd write me a check. And I don't know what that meant. However, it was a Grammy night. It was a night that I'd lost my second nomination to a song that was written that sounded a lot like mine. And then I was met with the misfortune of saying, we're dropping you, on the very party afterwards, the Atlantic party. And then 19 years later, I received a royalty after $7 million worth of expenses, red carpets, videos, 10, 12 videos, all the promotion, all the advances, which stopped in 1990. And no more advances after 92. None.
So if they dropped you...
I was broke. And I had to tour, and I injured myself touring.
If they drop you, they can withhold any royalty checks? If they drop you?
No, it was in my contract. I didn't argue the contract within the period of 2 years that you have to contest them on your original contract.
Right.
And I couldn't go back in time, and it was too late. And I was still in Europe plugging a record when I learned that I had to go at them for money that was owed me, but the consequences were far-reaching, as you can see.
Mm-hmm.
So $5,000 after 19 years sucks.
Yeah, definitely.
It doesn't look like that anymore because there's been an alteration of points. There's been a rectification on the part of Atlantic and Warner Group, who wish to have a clean slate with their artists. So I'm very, renewed, and I'm okay now.
Right.
But there was some times when it got pretty rough.
Yeah. That's the biz, I guess.
Yeah, I think so. Not about the money for me. It's about the quality of the music. So for you to tell me that you are, in your opinion, that the music you're listening to from the record I've made of my own volition with my own money and my own decision-making, wearing all the hats. I was producer, executive producer. I was, co-producer, but I was executive producer, financier, A&R, songwriter. I was all of the above, and then promoter, and all of the above. It was overwhelming.
Yeah.
Completely overwhelming. That's why I gave it away to a private company that they really didn't do anything for me except, I guess, pivot on the name, a nice cameo act on their roster, and they would profit from that and so on.
Right.
But all I know is when I finally left them after I did a 5-year lease, I extended it to a year, and then when I finally left, they got pretty upset, and I wondered why. And I saw how much money they were making. Or knows why? Who knows why? They were making money hand over fist on me, and it was legal.
Yeah.
So, I guess they had a lot to lose. So anyway, I never looked back. If I waited for there to be, there was CD Baby. I didn't want to, CDs don't sell. I wanted digital sales, and I wanted them covered. So I went with the new company called TuneCore, and I waited until there's a company called SoCan, which is the other, the Canadian version of ASCAP, and it's the writing organization. There's BMI and ASCAP in America. And in Canada, it's SoCan, and I read one of their little monthly reports, and they had a wonderful write-up from independent artists on all a little ledger list of all the places you can sign and what they can do and the percentages that they give. So I made that my library, and I found the right way to go. Mm-hmm. And I started it about 3 years ago. So 3 years later, I'm responsible for releasing my own releases digitally. I run off a couple of live, I do a deal with a company here in Indie Pool in Toronto, and I do a deal and get them to run off some really elegant copies, and I don't put on any of the, I put one version of Black Velvet I recorded so I don't have to pay the licensing fees to Atlantic, because I owned and re-recorded my own version of Black Velvet to, like, as a remake so that I would be able to make money. And it was a business thing, but nobody can tell apart. I played it with the songwriters, and David, the producer, was sitting in the back seat with full tilt speakers and a Mercedes saying, Alana, you can't use the vocal. I said, Dave, you listen a little closer. That's a new vocal. And so if you can fool the producer who's heard it about fucking 1,500 million times, I did a good job. So, and both writers are very proud of me. So yeah. I did that, and now I got that on the record, and I have autographed copies I'll sell, and I sell some to Amazon, non-autographed, just to have them available, affordable.
Yeah.
Some people like CDs.
Yep.
But they're just, you know, it's I stock 100, not 1,000.
I still miss albums.
What's that?
I still miss albums, you know.
Look, you and I both know if I have something that goes viral tomorrow, suddenly I'm made of a whack of dough.
Yeah.
Because suddenly I've placed my music in all the right avenues of where people can press send.
Yep.
And then so I'm not worried about, I'm setting my future up and just keeping myself plugged in.
Good.
And then releasing and releasing and releasing.
Because
that's
what
artists do.
You deserve all good things.
Thank you. I appreciate
you're a brilliant artist.
It's a delightful conversation with you. I enjoyed it.
Thank you. Thank you. Your dad was an important guy, wasn't he, in broadcasting?
Yeah, he was so humble. It's almost embarrassing to tell you of all his accomplishments. They're pretty outer-worldly. Like, they're pretty remarkable that they don't get praised here in this country because he was so humble. There was nobody to talk about them, and then he died.
Huh.
And there wasn't the media, the celebrated media then, that there is now, you see.
Right. What was his big thing? He was one of the first big broadcasters in Canada or something like that? Or
he was responsible for inventing Hockey Night in Canada.
Oh, Hockey Night. Oh, wow.
But I'm not allowed to put it in Wikipedia as a fact because there's no proof.
That's huge.
They're all the people that got together. You know how it came about? He worked for Young and Rubicam. He was a marketing director.
Okay.
And he was a creative director, the marketing director for the ad agency. And he had the three top, the agency, because of his smarty pants ideas, his creativity, he's a real thinker, a real idea man.
Mm-hmm.
And he thought of how popular hockey was, so he said, well, why don't we get the CBC... And we'll get three cameras. We'll get my buddy over here from the so-and-so church doing an organ thing. And we'll go, ring, ding, 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 in the innings. And we'll televise it and put commercials in between. And then we'll put all... And because he had three soap companies, Palmolive and Clorox and Jabex or something like that.
Right.
Three companies competing for the same billing or the same equal advertising brainstorms, if you will.
Right.
That he thought, well, this is one way to get them all. So he stuck all the ads around the floorboards, the baseboards, and had three cameras, and that was the advertising. And he got CBC involved and set the whole thing up. And then next thing you know, it became a national hit, and then eventually it took off in the rest of the world.
So he
had a little Black Velvet of his own.
So he invented the advertising on the baseboard, so the hockey.
Well, that's the inception for the idea. Why he did that?
Huh.
Eventually, he had to let soap companies go because they were so competitive, and they wanted more and more and more, and they were like, and it was too stressful. So he said, But in order to appease them all, that they were all going to get the same equal billing, he created this marketplace, which later turned into Hockey Night in Canada.
That's incredible.
But he doesn't get credit for it. Only very, very few people know this. There's a huge... apparently, he made stars in Canada. Like, I think he created a comedy team. The first... He was the producer. And not executive. It wasn't financing. He was the producer of the first radio show in Canada called The Happy Gang.
Okay.
That, I think, he is registered and listed for. And that's, you know, all these accomplishments were what they inducted him into the Hall of Fame for.
Mm-hmm.
And then shortly thereafter, I think he was responsible for a show called Wayne and Schuster, which was a very successful Canadian comedy show, sort of like their Saturday Night Live, and of the 1960s. 50s, 60s. Mm-hmm. Very beginnings of TV. He was in radio, and he made his money in radio marketing and then moved over. He said it was timing. He moved, and he had all that knowledge and all those clients, and he knew what he was doing. He was a big, you know, way ahead of the game in terms of radio, and he could just apply all those contacts and similar. Oh, I know a wonderful accolade that he is attributed to. He and an American I can't name and a British person from the BBC I can't name together were hired by the CBC as consultants to create royalties in the world and how people got paid.
Wow.
Cool, huh?
Yeah, it is pretty cool.
But this is 60 years ago, 60, 70 years ago. So he helped put together the guidelines and the blueprint for how people would be paid and for what divisions and what marketplaces and markets they'd be paid for so that the volume of the material that was seen, they would see a larger percentage for the artists, musicians would get paid, artists get paid, singers get paid, anybody that was on that recording gets paid.
There should be a documentary on your dad. Definitely.
I know! It's like, don't do a documentary on me! You know, I'm boring.
And you were friends with Mike Myers, right?
Well, it's totally circumstantial. He was friends and did the touring company in Second City in Ontario with Christopher Ward, who was my boyfriend who I lived with for 8 years prior to our splitting and having a successful record. But he was in the touring company, and Christopher was in the touring company just before he gave up everything, broadcasting, to become just simply a songwriter and move to L.A. And Mike Myers and him became dear friends, so I got to see my living room, in my dining room, watch him doing the first Garth to Mike Myers' Wayne. And then when Christopher had a TV show in Toronto called The All Night Show, it was a prototype for Much Music, which is Canada's MTV, and Mike Myers would crash the rooftop parties, or the barbecue rooftop parties, as Wayne, doing this, all righty, and oh, I'm not worthy, and all that shit, and on the TV show to get his chops together before he became internationally bound. So I was sort of like right there watching my dear, dear friend, young, you know, he was 18 years old at the time. He had to make a decision whether he was going to go to university, go to college, or go into acting. I think he made the right choice.
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I went on YouTube, and I saw him do the pre-SNL stuff, you know, Wayne's World stuff. He did, Wayne's Power Minute or something like that.
Well, he did stuff with Christopher Ward where Christopher would bring him in from the touring company on the weekends and say, okay, let her rip, and they'd do these stupid party scenes.
Right.
And Wayne would bring the character, Mike would bring the character Wayne in and just do him. That's where it started. Then he brought it to the stage. Then he was recruited by Lauren Green from SNL, and he brought Wayne to life on SNL. But he basically... groomed it, or he was a young boy and thought of this fabulous idea and then put it to words. I watched it come to life and was so proud.
Yeah.
Like a big sister proud of our dear boy, you know, and then he became the genius we all knew he was.
It's kind of funny,
that young man.
it's funny to see him in the younger days when he was first starting to do the character. You know,
yeah.
His wig wasn't right.
No, you know, it was so supposed to be not right. Everything was supposed to be really awful. That's what Second City is. It's all trial and error, and that makes it funny. It's like Bill Murray. Bill Murray shows up with an outfit that was outrage you. It's awful. Yeah. Now he's looking pretty slick, but he, you know, he'll come out like some Persian guy who looks like he has a harem.
Yep.
Or whatever. He'll come out in a prison suit.
Yeah.
God knows what he'll come out as.
Canada had some great comedians, you know.
Oh, I know. They really do.
Yeah.
They really do. We're very, very blessed. But they all leave us because that's where, you know, they're going to get seen by the masses. And for the pretty much for the most part, I guess you could blame me for the same thing. I got signed in America. I wanted an American deal.
Right.
It didn't help, but it didn't hurt. Yeah. And I never, ever would have had the success with Black Velvet that I did have without Atlantic backing me up financially. No way. Uh-uh. Never. Would have happened.
Well, speaking of boyfriends, one Robert Plant was your boyfriend at one time, right?
Yeah, that's sod. Yeah, he was. What of it? Yeah, I loved him. So what?
It sounds like you wanted to move on to your singing career. And
No, I didn't, actually. No, it was the reverse. It was quite the reverse. I wanted to move on with him, but I did want to move on with my singing career, and I had a choice to make, and I made the choice I did, and I lost the man.
Yeah.
Because I needed to work on... I worked my whole life to get here, and then when I met him, I was accomplished. And it was the time in my life when it would have been time to have a relationship with someone, have children, and I was nowhere near that. You know, a love relationship. And he was settling in to his life, and I was just starting. And that, I think, really bothered him. It really bothered him. Left him if his ego wasn't so big.
Were you a backup singer at one time with him? Is that how you guys met, or how did that come about?
No, that was a different person altogether. That's how I met David Tyson, my producer, when I was a young girl. And I was doing an Ontario Place concert with Nancy Simmons, and I was a backup singer in Nancy Simmons for Robert Priest, who's a poet in Canada who co-wrote Song Instead of a Kiss with me and Nancy. He's a wonderful, wonderful poet. No, but you're thinking of Backtrack Me?
Right.
Backtrack Me, Robert Plant? No, I wrote Song Instead of a Kiss and sang it with him in mind. I didn't write it. I wrote it with him in mind as a loss of love, a great, great loss of something that really perhaps I felt should have been. I still think it should have been. But ego is strong, and ego is powerful, and ego has money. And I think possibly, as I look back in hindsight, it's very possible that he probably was doing me a favor because he could have brought me more harm being my boyfriend or my husband. Although I disagree. I always try and think of people were doing the best they could.
Yep.
So I'm hoping that, you know, I'm presuming he did the best he could do.
Did he, 29 Palms, was that about you?
Sure enough. I brought him to the 29 Palms, and then he had the nerve to sing about it, I'll kill him. And then put another girl in it, I'll kill him. Of course, you look like me. I'll kill him. Whatever.
I interviewed Judy Collins, you know, sweet Judy Blue Eyes. You know, Stephen Stills was about
her. Oh, she's amazing.
And
bring
now
in
they're
the
back.
Clowns.
Yeah, they're touring together again. Stephen Stills and Judy Collins are touring together again.
Who is?
Judy Collins and Stephen Stills. They're together.
Oh, wow. That's cool. I like that.
I don't know. So Robert Plant may call you up and say, let's tour together. Let's do something.
Well, he'll have to get a stretcher to get me there. And I'm sure if there's anybody in the world that could afford the stretcher to get me there, it would be him. So where's the freaking call already? Whatever. I'd love to, but I need to get some music together so I've got something to sell, and then it makes it worthwhile. But I'll be honest with you all, he's got a big, big heart, that man. He does a lot of charity work.
Right.
So I wouldn't doubt that he'd look upon me as a charity case.
No.
Whatever. I'd love to sing with him again. I'd love it. But, you know, I'll try. One day I'll send him a track and say, okay, it's ready. Just put your fucking voice on it and send it back and shut up.
Yeah, why not?
Why not? you know. But he's so important, and everybody wants something from him, you know.
Yeah.
So you can understand how one might think, you know, like, I would never presume. It's not something you can presume.
Right.
It's something that has to be of one's free will. You know, and if it's in the cards, it will be.
Yep.
I love his voice.
You never know.
And I just put out positive messages, and, you know, I tell the truth to the way it was, and I'm a big girl, you know. He broke my heart once. He can't do it again.
Yeah.
But I do love his voice and his artistry. I'm a gentle and warm fan. I'm very in tremendous respect for him, and I would never drag him down in a personal way. With all my derivative, my derisive information that I have, based when two people don't have a happy ending, I would never share that, just because I would prefer, I've chosen to keep him elegant in my eyes, because he, you know, he's struggled, and I look at him as being a great artist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you two would be a wonderful collaboration, you know?
Well, we tried it once. Everything in the studio blew up.
Really?
Yep.
Huh.
Yep.
Huh.
Strange. Yeah, strange coincidence.
Yeah.
And then I never got the opportunity afterwards.
Yeah. Well, Anna, here's a question that I ask everyone that I interview. If you had a Field of Dreams wish, like the movie, to play or collaborate with anyone from the past or present, who would that be?
Well, obviously, it would be Robert Plant.
Robert Plant, yeah.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and not because of who he is,
mm-hmm.
but because I'm a fan. I just love what he does. I think that he's so... I'm proud of someone like him. He still keeps the music proud, the blues proud. He makes good quality choices. It's been a tough call. It's hard being someone like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to be that, and not many have accomplished what he's accomplished with a solo career, which
right.
unfortunately was what I tried to I spoke to openly when back in the day about him maybe not doing Led Zeppelin with Atlantic because he could make more like he's really worked very hard at becoming a solo artist, but because I had too much say in the matter, they kind of dumped me.
Mm-hmm.
So I regret it.
Yeah.
I wish I kept my mouth shut. It's none of my business. And I pissed Jimmy off. And it was none of my business. So, you know.
It
was the right thing for him to do, but nobody wanted to hear that.
Yep.
So I was like that. You know the Spinal Tap movie? And the girl, when
oh, yeah.
she says, oh, can you put a little bit of doubly on it? Oh, that was me.
That was you, huh?
That was me. I was the doubly. And if I ever do a movie about my life, it'll be a comedy, and I'll be the doubly. I'll be the doubly. I'll be the brunt of a Led Zeppelin joke. That's funny. I can live with that. It's funny. In hindsight, it's true. You know, I really should have kept my mouth shut, even though I was right.
Yeah.
It still cost me a record deal.
Yeah.
So,
how's your acting career going on?
Well, I know a lot of directors who'd love me to act in their film. I've not said yes to any of them. I said yes to one and he died, so there is how it's going. It was a really stellar performance. I gave an Academy Award. And I played the devil.
You played the devil?
Yeah, I have snippets of it to show the performance, but that's the best I can do.
Yeah.
I think there's snippets of it online. You can see what I can do as an actor. It's like one of those scenes where I'm meeting with God and I'm mad at God because he's put me in this body. Well, it's a part of the movie, right? Is it a trailer?
Right.
And I'm playing a character called Elle, and I morph from a man into a woman. So I had to learn how to do a man. This is like 20 years ago, before anybody was doing men. Thank you, Hilary Swank. And yep. I was doing men. I played a Jewish... rabbi, and
Jewish
I had to learn
rabbi.
How to pose my lips and so on to be
oh
able to
God.
Be boyish.
Huh.
I look like a very young boy. You know, it scared me. I look like my dad. My dad was a very pretty-faced individual when he was young, and I looked just like him. It was weird.
Really?
Yeah, it was spooky. I looked just like him, only higher cheekbones, whatever. And then I morphed into me. I was, and then I outfitted myself in a Italian tiara. No, not a tiara. What's it called? That thing that you put on your head when you go to church, a black lace mantilla.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I put a mantilla on my head. It was my mom's. I put that she used in church. I put it in a like Latin mass, and I put it on my head and wore crucifixes and wore a kind of a Game of Thrones outfit.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, Rocking Horse is just Game of Thrones. They're just late.
Huh.
Welcome to the picture.
Yeah, definitely.
Not much difference, is there?
Nope.
Nope. Whatever. It's nice to know I was, like, 25 years ahead of myself. I really came out in the wrong decade.
Yeah, so have I. I really did,
and now, well, it's not too late, because I've always believed all that matters is how well you sing a song. And I've proven that, so I'll just keep on doing that.
You have.
And I don't care about success, and that's usually why people get it, when they don't care. When you stop caring... And you just make great work, and you stop caring, that's when it comes.
That's when it comes. I agree. I agree with you. So what's next? You're working on some things now?
Music-wise? Well, I'm not working on an album, even though I really am working on an album. It's called Queen of Blue.
Okay.
I'm going to be making my version of a blues record.
Oh, great.
But the first thing I'm going to do, and I can talk about it, is I'm trying to find time with my producer from the 85 BPM record. We started a popera. It's a four-minute... opera song, but it's a pop song with the Lithuanian Lithuanian choir, and I'm trying to get maybe I can get the London Philharmonic. I got to get some choir on it, a budget for some choir. So I'm gonna have to do some funding, and I got a guy in Prague, the conductor for the Prague Philharmonic. I can get him to write up a score and put together some musicians and pay up, get some budget funding to, you know, to score it so that it's got a orchestra behind, a real one. But the track's all done. I just have to fill it out, right? I have to finish the choruses, sing the choruses operatically. But the verses are all sung in this. What people are telling me is that this is the most extraordinary thing they've ever heard. And I just think, oh, I'm too close to it. But it's really quite beautiful, and it's my life story, and it makes me weep every time I sing it. It's about me growing up as a little girl and wanting to get out of my uniform. And I've universalized it by making... all I ever wanted was to wear the color of my skin. I just wanted to be, you know, to get out of these coffins, these too tight coffins. Let me free from all these strictures. And it's all relatable by what Lady Gaga is getting across in her message about being yourself.
Right.
But
right.
It's my panic and my growing up and all my fear that I started with Nancy Simmons 25 years ago in Santa Monica, California, in... Pacific Palisades in my studio apartment. We recorded it there, and then I kept it, and I remade it. We ran out of money because it cost me too much, and I had to get the record out. So I went to the bank, popped another $60,000, hired Terry Brown, said, let's mix it, and there was no time for that. So now what I may do is I'll probably have to get Terry Brown to mix it and add tracks for me and then pay him and get it done so I can get it out and get some funding and put it out. Because it really is a lovely piece. It's sort of like my follow-up to Song Instead of a Kiss, only it's an opera.
Mm-hmm.
But right now, that's really big. People would love it.
Yeah, I think so.
So maybe what I'd like to do is hire... I've got a wonderful video director who I know would love to do this. And I know what little footage there would be of me, he would make me look ravishing as a platinum blonde. However... I am doing a spoof off the Queen, being the Queen of Blue.
Right.
So I am going to be a Blue Queen. So I may take on a character of a Blue Queen.
Cool.
I know that sounds crazy, but I got this wacky idea, and it's all in my head, and it's not going to go away.
Mm-hmm.
And I will be the Queen of Blue, but not just the Queen of Blue, like, Queen of Blue, the color blue.
Right.
I'm writing as many songs as there is as possible with the word blue in the title, and they're all really lovely.
So, a release date in 2018 sometime? Or
oh, no. I'd say for In the Pink, sure. I'll get In the Pink out by maybe 2019.
Okay.
I'll get In the Pink out.
All right.
But blues album, I'm not sure, you know. I got a long road, and I'm not sure whether I can deliver. I have to sit down with the new manager and decide what's possible and what's not. And at that point, like I said earlier, if I've got new product out and it's freaking extraordinary and people want more and they want to see me, I'm happy to do it, but someone's going to have to put me on a private plane and they're going to have to get a stretcher to get me there. Now, that doesn't mean it can't be done if I'm willing, but it's going to be very, 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 very expensive.
Right.
So I have to find ways to get me in people's homes.
Exactly. Yeah, we need to see you on tour.
That's what we need. It's expensive.
Yeah.
Because I have a condition that prevents me from being able to sit down in a plane.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
So my neck, it's a spinal condition, so I'm straight as a board. So I need be transported horizontally.
Well, was that from the accident you were talking about?
Nah, it's from the chiropractor adjustments.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's from the chiropractic abuse, and my body's in trauma. And it's an autoimmune disease, which means it could go away any minute. Who knows? Maybe by the time I've got this record done, I've sung my fucking disease out of me, and then I'll be ready to be walking. I'll fucking kick his ass. Don't worry. It'll all come together if it's meant to be.
Little Jack
Daniels. I've got a long climb ahead of me, but I'm really, really strong.
Yeah.
There is nobody stronger than me.
You sound like
it. I know that. And I think probably because I'm willing to admit how weak I am, or how frail, or how vulnerable I am.
Yeah.
And I really believe that when we go to those places where we sing like we did in Black Velvet or in Songs of the Kiss or in Especially Lover of Mine or places where I had to be honest with myself, that's the most vulnerable place anybody could ever go.
Mm-hmm.
Artists go there. It's very vulnerable. And if you can tap into that energy, which I believe that God allowed me to do,
right,
to continue doing, I think that's my gift. And I have to put God as my manager. Let him pick the people, just pick them that are really good for me and can give me what I need to get out there and live happy and contented. And with the wealth surrounding me that provides me the comfort, the security, and the ability to meet my needs so I can go out in style and not be perplexed and overwhelmed and further injured by those that want, and I keep not knowing my limitations.
Right. Amen.
Yeah. It's not really about touring anymore, although I don't see it being the end for me. I just think I'm going through a real challenging spell, and I need to find my way back to my music, and I will.
You will. You definitely will.
I mean, nothing's ever stopped for me. I haven't stopped writing. I've got... people want to write songs, and I go, I can't. I'm working on 15 years of songwriting. I got to get out, demo, and where I'm going. Oh, it's been 2 months, and I only got one done. Where?
Yeah. Anyway. Well, I want to thank you so much for
thank
being on
very
the show
much.
Today. And, of course, for all your incredible music. Looking forward to an exciting and great things for you in 2018.
Oh yeah!
New music.
Thank you so much. That's most welcome thought. I'll buy that.
You're a wonderful artist, and we all love you.
Well, thank you. It's been a delight sharing my story and the conversation with you, and on a really nice. I don't feel like I'm talking too fast. I can hear you. It's been a really, really good, smooth conversation. So I probably won't cringe so much when I hear myself back.
You sound great.
Thank you. Would you send me a link?
I sure will, definitely.
Wonderful. I'll post it on my Facebook page and all my social media.
No problem. Thank
all
you,
right, thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
Take care, Ray. It was a pleasure.
You too.
Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye now. For more information about Atlanta Miles, visit www.atlantamiles.com and also visit her on Facebook at www.facebook.com/Atlanta Miles. Very special thanks today to Christian Michaels, Managing Director, and for allowing our interview today with Atlanta Miles. And, of course, Doug and Don Newsom with BBS Radio for making it all happen every show. Join me biweekly at our new time and date, biweekly Wednesdays at 5 p.m. Pacific and 8 p.m. Eastern on The Ray Shasho Show. If you have comments, suggestions, or would like to be a guest on The Ray Shasho Show, email us at ray@publicityworksagency.com. And don't forget to purchase a copy of my book, entitled Check the G's, The True Story of an Eclectic American Family and Their Wacky Family Business, or the second edition entitled Wacky Shenanigans on F Street, Proud to be Politically Incorrect in Washington, D.C., available now at Amazon.com. You will live it. Have a great week, everybody, and Happy New Year.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to The Ray Shasho Show, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call 941-877-1552 or visit us at publicityworksagency.com. Specializing in author and music artist publicity plans, we shine when we make you shine. Join Ray Shasho every Monday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern on PBS Radio, Station 1.